What's up, everybody? Welcome back into another episode of Cult Film Cafe Does Christmas. That is right. It is me, Jonathan, one of your hosts. And as always, I'm joined by my partner in crime, Kenzie McLean.
Hello there.
So on this episode, we will be taking a look at 1947's Christmas comedy drama, Miracle on 34th Street, directed by George Seaton.
Experience the all-new colorized version of Miracle on 34th Street.
I'm Santa Claus. Oh, you don't believe that?
Like you've never seen it before.
Amazing.
The all-time family classic celebrates its 60th anniversary with an all-new special edition of Miracle on 34th Street.
It's wonderful.
In full color, including the original black and white classic, digitally remastered with all new features.
I intend to prove that Mr. Kringle is Santa Claus.
But I've got a feeling he is Santa Claus, Mother.
Miracle on 34th Street. Own it this holiday season.
So I'm pretty sure when we done White Christmas that we said that it was the oldest film that we'd ever done in the podcast, and we've went even older.
Yeah, we have. I didn't actually realise how old this film was.
Yeah, I think, was it like 7 years of a difference, I think?
So like White Christmas was 1953 or 4?
I think 1954.
And this is 1947.
Seven. 7 years, and it's that old that it's black and white.
Yeah. Even it was in colour, which is odd. I didn't expect it to be black and white.
Oh, no, you got colour films at this point.
But this one is blank.
It might have been a monetary decision.
Possibly. It's not even widescreen.
It's the Snyder Cut.
It is the Snyder Cut. Yes. Yeah, you can tell how old it is from audio to the size of the aspect ratio of the screen for it being in black and white. I mean, this is the 40s after all. So, yeah.
Funnily enough, Kenzie hasn't made the same joke as he did on White Christmas.
Oh, you're going to bring it up? Nah.
Oh, it's almost as old as me. Yeah, funny. I'm not quite that old.
I said it was older than you.
Older than me, fucking hell. If I was born in 1947, I probably wouldn't be doing this podcast. Let's face it, I might not even be here if I'm being
1947, that would make you 75? 76?
75.
So that's 10 years older than my gran.
Old as fuck up. Yeah, 10 years older than your gran?
Yeah, my gran was born in 1937.
10 years younger than your gran, you mean?
That's what I meant to say, yeah.
Fucking hell. Jesus, I was like, fuck me, how old was your gran and shed your parents, man?
My gran was young when she had her children.
Nah, I get that, but I mean, if she was born in 1947, your dad's like, what, 60?
He's 60, yeah.
Let's not age.
Same age as Dr. No.
So is my dad.
Eh? Nice.
Both our dads are 60.
1962.
But I'm 33 and you're 21. There's a big differentiation there.
12 years.
And I've got a sister who's older than me. Oh, my dad was only a teenager when I had my sister, right? There you go. So I'll give you a rough estimate to how old my sister is. Don't worry. Age her on the podcast, that's probably not very fair. But anyway, let's not stop waffling, let's get back to Miracle on 34th Street. So we could have done the 1994 version of this film, which is probably one that is more recognisable to people, with Richard Attenborough playing the role of Santa in that one. But we decided, I think, when we were making the list, that why not pick the original version. I'm not so sure I did, but Kenzie ended up watching this one, so we just ran with it anyway.
I think we did. It's just that I think we came to the point where we were like, we don't watch enough old cinema. If we have the option to do the old version, why not just do the old? I can't remember if we did definitely choose the old one for this one, but I was just like, why not? And also the old one was on Disney Plus as well. So it was like, Let's just go with that one.
Yeah, so people have maybe seen the 1994 one. I am not familiar with either, to be perfectly honest with you.
I didn't know there was an original. I've had heard of the 90s one, but I didn't know if it was any good or not.
So I don't know what the actual differences are, but this film's weird. I think, with Kenzie, you watched it before me, and you were saying, you were like, it's weird. It is weird. It is a really quite strange film. I wasn't really expecting what happened. It starts really strange as well. It's just like a tracking shot following. It's like a normal guy. Like, you would just assume it was like a normal guy. He's just dressed in like 40s attire. You know, a coat, bowler hat, cane. Probably had a suit on, I'm guessing. And he's just randomly walking down the street, and he stops at a, like, it must have been a toy shop, I'm guessing, some form of store. And there's a guy inside putting a Christmas display out, and he starts chatting on the window, telling them that he's got the reindeers the wrong way. I'm like, fucking hell, man, what is going on here? And then obviously it gives you an into, obviously, Kris Kringle. See, that's another thing that this film's done is, Kris Kringle, where did Kris Kringle come from? That's what I want to know. I thought it was like Old St. Nick. I thought it was like Old St. Nick was the fable. Chris, you've got all these different iterations, I suppose, of Santa. This one chose the moniker Kris Kringle for the film. And then he sort of quickly gets swept into the Macy's parade at Thanksgiving when the Santa that they'd hired is drunk. Which, keep that in mind, because we've got a film coming up about a drunk Santa. You can maybe guess what it is. but we'll talk about that when we come to that. And then obviously he's a stand-in, he gets asked. And then eventually starts working at Macy's, the store. And then it kind of film takes like a weird sort of turn because he is Santa, but he believes he's Santa, and they all think he's mental, some people think he's mental. So they try and get him, they get him medically looked at, and then eventually it becomes a court case.
Yeah.
It's a strange film.
So bizarre. Like, I was not expecting like a courtroom drama for a Christmas film. Like, I got the whole point of, he says he's Santa, but is he? And he's going to try and prove that he is Santa, or he's going to make the little kid believe in Santa and the mother too. It's just so weird. Everyone in this film as well, like, most people are completely fine with him. It's almost like they believe he is Santa. I don't think they do. I feel like they just, like, are just fine with him thinking that he is. And there's the one psychiatrist who hates it, and then the case comes. It becomes a courtroom. It's like fucking To Kill a Mockingbird or something. I don't even know. It's really, it was out of nowhere. It's kind of odd. It's so weird. Like, everything that happens, the way that Santa talks through the whole film, or Kris Kringle, sorry, he's just like, oh, and no one picks him up for it. Like, he'll mention something like, he was talking to someone, and he'll mention something like, oh yeah, refer to something like about Christmas or Santa. And he'll say I in it, and not just say, like, oh, that person. So he always refers to himself as Santa, but no one picks him up on it. They're just kind of like, they don't even, like, react to it, which is weird. But, so once he actually does start saying that, I am Kris Kringle. But then it raises the question of, why is he just cutting about the street? Was he just on vacation? I don't know. But
that's a strange part, just how the film starts. Like, this guy's very strange.
Is he trying to bring everyone's? Is he going there for a certain reason? Was he trying to, like, I know mention later in the film he's talking about people trying to get people's, like, hope up and stuff like that, or trying to convince people to. He was trying to look for some reason to. Of why he's still doing it, I guess, or something. I don't know. It was something like that when he says it, anyways, in like the insane asylum.
See the way you're talking about that is like, why is he came to New York City?
Yeah.
To try and boost Christmas spirit. Yeah. That sounds a bit like an element of the Christmas Chronicles. It is quite similar because you've got the Pierce family. I'm not so sure. I think it is the Pierce family, and the oldest sibling has stopped believing, and he's not in the book on the family tree. He's the only name that's not there. And then the flip side, if you look at This Miracle on 34th Street, is it's the young girl, Susan Walker. She doesn't believe in anything because her mother's decided to bring her up in a realist kind of fashion rather than letting kids believe in fairy tales, which I think's fucking rough, by the way. That's a harsh way to bring somebody up.
I get it, but she was way too harsh with it. Like, there's a certain point, like, all right, don't, like, it's not even like she doesn't even, like, celebrate Christmas at all by the sounds of it. It's kind of weird. Or any holiday, it's like, it's all fake. It's like groups bringing her up as, an adult. It's really weird. Yeah. Like, what age were you when you discovered Santa wasn't real? I don't know if you'll even remember, but...
I would say probably about 10.
See, it was younger for me. Maybe that's what it is, just, like, more like nowadays, I guess. Because, like, I mean, my brother pretty much always didn't believe it, because he's big brain. I did... But again, I was still pretty young. I don't know if I still... By the time I was like 6 or odd, I don't know if I believed anymore. Like, it's kind of weird.
I mean, I'm just guesstimating 10. I mean, it wasn't older than that. I mean, it could have been younger than that, but it's just a guesstimate. Like, I probably... The reason that I stopped believing is probably because I found Christmas presents when I was hunting for them.
Oh, and that's kind of what you do. Well, that's good point.
So that'll be when you go, oh, wait a minute. So
I could have been younger.
That's the thing. Santa's like the only thing that I did believe. Well, the Tooth Fairy. I mean, everybody believed in the Tooth Fairy for a wee bit.
Tooth Fairy was mad.
But the Tooth Fairy just disappears. Because once fall out, it's just like nothing happens. It's like it's done. Never believed in the Easter Bunny.
Near did that. Do you ever believe in, like, God?
I mean, I went to church when I was younger, quite a bit.
My family are not religious at all, but, like, my primary school kind of used to hammer on a little bit about, like, Christianity and stuff like that, but then they did completely stopped it. So I don't even know if I believe in God. I remember I had a friend and he said to me at one point when we were 9 or something like that, he said he doesn't believe in God but he believes in Santa, and I thought that was like the funniest thing I had ever heard. I'm rambling now, but like, I'm just bringing it up because...
It's kind of connected in a weird way. Like, I think people that believe and have faith probably believe in a lot of different things a lot longer. I mean, obviously Santa... there's nothing to say that a person like that never existed, but obviously there's not a person flying around the world in one night delivering presents, unfortunately. Sorry to anybody who's listening that still believes in Santa, but, well, maybe it is real, I'm not so sure. Maybe I shouldn't be so sceptical, but no, she was brought up in a weird way. It's just quite weird. Like, maybe this era of sort of cinema was a bit more real and a bit reality rather than magic and stuff. I'm not quite sure. Like it's been prefaced a number of times, I've not watched enough sort of classic Hollywood to give that viewpoint, but Natalie Wood plays Susan Walker. She was probably more known for her appearance in Rebel Without a Cause that starred the late, great James Dean, who sadly lost his life before he became a fully fledged movie star. But yeah, she's appeared in numerous films and disappeared in the early 80s just when she was on vacation. And her body's never been found to this day, I don't think.
No.
That's crazy. It's mad. It's a weird conspiracy, probably. Let's not go down this rabbit hole, but yeah, just wanted to bring that up. Edmund Gwenn plays Kris Kringle, very good. He looks really like Santa.
He really does.
That's probably the whole point of it. And you've got Maureen O'Hara playing Doris Walker, Susan's mother, and John Payne playing Fred Gailey, who is a neighbour to the Walkers and ends up being Kris Kringle's lawyer. They're the sort of main people. You've got a couple other not notable cast members, but parts, I suppose. Probably the main one being, well, Big Macy. Big Macy turns up, the actual head honcho of the whole shebang.
Yeah.
And he actually believes, that's the best of it as well. It's quite strange.
I don't know if he believes or it's making him money, so he's like...
Well, I suppose it is making him money. It's weird. But this film's quite weird. It's like classic like cinema. If you're into that style of filmmaking, you'll probably really enjoy this. I am not all that sold on it. It's not really my kind of film. There's a lot of editorial choices and shot choices which just aren't really for me. I've said this a million and one times in old cinema, I'm not a big fan of the phasing in and out of shots. What do you call that? Fade-ins.
Fade-ins, yeah.
Fade-ins
or fade-outs.
Dissolves and shit like that. All that crap. Clean cuts are probably the way to go, and that's what you see in modern cinema 99.9% of the time.
Yeah, it just depends what you're... I think like nowadays, it depends what... Because they still do use like fading cuts, but it's for specific kind of shots. Like a fade-in shot I would think of is like if someone was walking through a hot desert, you always picture with it like a shot like that. That would be like, oh, the music on, and it's like kind of fade into shots of them walking through like a... If it's on a bit that works, I guess. For specific things. Usually if you're just cutting to another shot, there's no need to do it. Still used then again, but it's more used with a certain time in the film. Where old films used it way more. But yeah, maybe some people like that. I don't know. I've always been a big fan of just the cut twos. Yeah. I don't know how I feel about this film, to be honest, because I liked it, but I didn't think there was that, like, it is weird, but I was, at the same time, I didn't think there was, like, that much to it. It felt really short to me. Like, I think it is only, like, 90 minutes or so, but, like, yeah, it's just kind of goes, and it gets to the point, it doesn't feel like there's any, in most films, you get to a point where there's, like, a bit of an issue comes up. But the issue in this film is, Kris Kringle goes to an asylum, but that lasts like 2 seconds. He just gets taken out again, then he gets taken to court, and then there's like no issue for the most part in the court. They seem to kind of come up with issues quite quickly. If there's an issue, it's like, oh, what are we gonna do? Oh, this is what we're gonna do. Do that. I kind of like, one thing I do like is how the final part happens with the little girl sending him a letter to Kris Kringle. And it makes the male people go like, oh wait, if she's sending hers to there, let's just send every single one we've got to there as well. Which I thought was actually a really cool thing. I quite like that actually, but I don't know. I feel like for the most part, I thought this film was good, alright. It didn't blow me away. Definitely wasn't bad. It was just kind of somewhat enjoyable. It's a film that I've watched. And I'm not sure if I'll ever watch again, but I'm kind of glad I watched it. It's good to watch a film from a time where I wasn't alive and how films were, to show, see how different films were. So yeah, don't know about you.
Yeah, I'm pretty much the same. It's a bit of a strange film. I'm not sold on the ending of this film. I don't really kind of get it. It's a bit of a strange one.
Well, do you not like that it's like... ambiguous or
well, like, well less no, you ambiguous? Can't say that. I love ambiguous endings. You know me, I'm a big fan of open endings. It's just this one's quite strange. It's like, well,
it's
the whole premise
ambiguous.
Is like,
it's...
well, he well, so as well, was that where he stayed when he was living in this place, and then he put it up for sale so that they'd buy
no way.
Susan's
didn't have, no, he didn't have a place. That's the whole thing.
But that was the whole point. Well, his cane was there, so who stayed there before? Did
I
you not
know.
See his cane? That was
I saw his cane, but the whole point of the cane being there was supposed to prove that he was Santa.
Well, how does that prove he's Santa?
Because his cane was there proving that he did cause them to end up buying that house. The girl
didn't...
got the exact wish that she wanted. She told the only person she told about it was Kris Kringle. Went there. So the tire swing was outside the house.
It was. But how did he get people to put the house up for sale?
Maybe the house was always for sale. I don't like.
See what I mean? It's I don't know. It's quite a weird one. So they end up, I'm assuming, buying the house. But I mean, you don't get.
Hey, I think it pretty much proves that he is Santa. Like, cause there's no other way that could have happened without him. Being that, but other than complete and utter coincidence, so yeah, I don't think they were just driving through
a neighborhood, and then she was like, "Stop the car, get out." It's like it's quite strange. I'm not gonna.
I don't think this film wants you to like question if that's Santa or not. I think from the start of the film, it kind of makes you just think they're not. That is just Santa, and it's more other people in the film who kind of go like. But I think with the end of the film, it kind of clears any possible. Doubt for the characters, I guess, or makes them go, "Oh shit, maybe that actually was Santa." Cause I think for the most part, the way I saw it, as I always just saw that's Santa.
Oh well, but okay. Well,
maybe you're different on it. That's just how I felt like it. Was.
Yeah, well, we've got a difference of opinion. If you watch it and make up your own mind, yeah, the film's strange, man. It's like as much as we're mixed on it, it's really highly rated. I mean. On IMDb, it's got a 7.9 out of 10. Rotten Tomatoes, 96% fresh, 87% audience score. It's still got super high scores across the board. Some fun wee quirks about the film, which I quite like in terms of the production. It was shot on location during the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. In 1946, like that, when the actual parade was happening, Edmund Glenn actually played Santa Claus in that version of the parade of for Macy's, which is quite cool. There's yet another film that was released in the summer, even though it's a Christmas movie. but that baffles my brain. I don't really understand. What was happening? It's quite strange though. Like this is another thing that gets drummed into you whenever you study and you want to make stuff. Is like you need to get consent for everything, but the studio didn't actually have consent from Macy's and Gimbel's until after they had finished filming, quite strange. Yeah, they didn't get consent until the filming had concluded. It's a bit of a strange one. It is a bit of a strange film. I don't really have much more to say on the matter other than if you're looking for a Christmas film that's kind of old and you want to transport yourself back to that world of cinema, then yeah, check it out. It's pretty decent. But if you're used to modern cinema and the way modern cinema feels, you're probably not really going to like this film. Just going to say that, but you might, you never ever know. People get different things from films that they watch, so yeah. As much as we're mixed on it, I mean, I would still advise you to go and check it out if you're listening to this. But there's nothing more of note that I would really like to bring up other than the main sort of four characters in the film are all really strong and really well acted, and it is quite a cohesive story, but it's got its own quirks, so I suppose in that sense it's actually quite a decent film. But yeah, not fully for me.
Yeah.
Do you have anything that you want to add before we jump into the ratings?
Not really. All I'm going to say is it just me or in old films, they talk really fast?
It's on like 1.5 speed or something.
Yeah, it's like it's just the dialogue.
I think it's the over, really, but it's also, I feel like this was overdubbed in post, this film. It sounds like it. I don't know if like that was always the case with old cinema, probably not, but it sounds like it was overdubbed. Maybe I'm just making shit up, but that's just the way it sounded to me. But yeah, it's strange. I don't know, I never really noticed that they were super quick, but yeah, now you bring it up, yeah, fast dialogue. But I think in a film like this, when there's not really much happened, you're pretty much, once the parade's out the way, you're either in Macy's, in the courtroom, or in the sort of mental asylum, or in people's homes, and there's only a kind of a couple of that you see. So that's pretty much it. There's not really a lot of stuff happening in the world. So dialogue probably is key in a film like this.
Fair.
So yeah, anyway, that is us. We have spoke enough about the film, I feel. So we'll just quickly jump into the ratings, if you're happy to do so.
I am happy to do so.
I will let you take it away first.
Okay. I quite like this film. Not like a lot, but like I do like it. It was an enjoyable film to check out, and I would recommend anyone to check it out. I think people really should check old, people who don't watch like old cinema really should go and check out old cinema. And I need to do it as well. Like I'm saying, I watch a lot of it. I don't. I'm kind of glad that I'm starting to see more of it now, because it's good to go back and check what films were like. And I think this is a good example for a good Christmas film. I would definitely recommend White Christmas a lot more, because I really like that film. But this is one's even older, and that fucking hell, this one's even in black and white. But actually, for itself, it's good. It's unique. It is weird. It is like, I didn't expect this film to be as kind of weird as it was. I didn't realize what the plot was. I didn't really know much anything about the film at all, so it kind of caught me off guard of how the film went, and then it became like a legal battle, and it was odd. But for the most part, I enjoyed it, and it felt really quick, so it passed by really quickly. I was fully entertained the whole way through. I wasn't fully into it. I liked it. I wouldn't say I would like it any more than that. It was enjoyable. I don't know if I'll watch it again, but I wouldn't say I would never watch it again. Like it's because it is decent. I would probably give it I'm going to give it a 3. I think it's about a 3, like for me, like, because I did like it. I thought it was good, but I didn't think it was much better than that. It's enjoyable to on a first watch. I don't know about a second. I would still recommend it though.
Yeah, I mean, I'm a bit mixed. I'm like really quite mixed on it. I do appreciate the film and the performances in it, and yeah, it's obviously got its own quirks to make it its own sort of unique feel, but it's really strange. And maybe I'm just not into older Christmas films, or maybe even Christmas films in general. I feel as though maybe they're all just middle of the road until you get like one that peaks and comes out of nowhere. I'm sure we'll have a few of them coming up. Well, I just assume so. Well, Mackenzie was really a big fan of White Christmas, so that got a really high rating from him. Yeah, I think this film's got enough to merit a watch, 100%. But yeah, I'm probably in the same vein. I was going to go right down the middle and give it 2.5, but I'll probably give it an extra half and say it's a 3 out of 5, which I think's fair. So, yeah, it's on Disney Plus if you'd like to go and check it out. So, did we both just give it the same rating there? I think so, eh?
Yeah. I think it's what it deserves, really. Like, it's an enjoyable film, and it is good, but that's all I'd really say. It's not... I was like, oh, I really liked that, or I liked that. It's more like, it was good. And yeah, I don't know. It's just kind of how I feel about it. I feel so inoffensive. It's just kind of enjoyable-ish.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't know. It's weird.
Inoffensive is the right word. Well, it's the right meaning, maybe wrong word. I don't even know what the right word is, but yeah.
Yeah, I
get where you're coming from, but no. Definitely go and check it out if you're looking for something you haven't seen, or if you're like everybody else and just watch the same half a dozen films during the holiday season, then fair enough. We just decided to kind of take a deeper dive. We have got some classics for everybody coming up, probably. Most people's favourites will be amongst the films that have yet to come on the podcast. But yeah, it has been an absolute pleasure, as always, talking about another film with all you lovely people. And as always, you can check out past episodes of the podcast, wherever you get your podcast, or if you're struggling to find us, just search for us in Google. It's the easiest way. We have a unique Google search, which is quite cool. I don't know how we ended up with that, but it's quite strange that we did end up with that. I don't even know how we ended up knowing that we did have one of those, to be fair. I don't know if Kenzie Googled the podcast or I did first. I'm not sure. But yeah. And also, if you'd like to support us on social media, you can do it by giving us a follow on both Instagram and Twitter. We are at Cult Film Cafe on both of those platforms. So yeah, without further ado, this has been another episode of Cult Film Cafe Does Christmas. It's been a pleasure as always. So it's a goodbye from me.
And it's a goodbye from me.
Podcast out.